following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Tropical hot dog night!
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Dave's Gone By. Talk radio, interviews, comedy, music, and more. Coming to you live every Sunday night from Merrick's own WGBB 1240 on your AM radio dial and via live streaming audio at WGBB.com. So if you're heading home in your car and passing the listening range, which depending on the weather can be 50 miles from here or 5 miles from here, you can still get the show. Just go in the house, boot up your computer, and in a minute or two, you can hear us coming through even louder and clearer than we do on the radio. And I know we have listeners all over the country. Not sure if we have an international contingent. That would be really impressive. So if you're listening to the show and you're not in America, you're in some big country like England or Italy or Australia, or if you're in some dinky, useless country like Hungary or Burkina Faso, let us know. We want to spread our goodwill to all these lesser third world nations that are too backward to do this kind of radio. Not their fault. We realize in most of these places, people don't have time for high-level entertainment. They're too busy swatting flies off their eyelids and praying for the next care package. But this show is all about love. It's about showing people, through humor, that we're all equal and on the same level, even those of us who are not. It's about reminding people that it's okay for America to be number one, but it's no shame for everyone else to be number two. And those who say we should mind our own business are almost right. We're minding our own businesses. There's a difference. China has remained isolationist, and look where it got them. Beijing now has so many face masks, it looks like a Ranger game. Now, I'm probably not explaining this very well, but this song by a British captain in the RAF who moved to America and became a career officer in our own military. Now, this song, yes, it's a little rah-rah, a little chauvinistic in the original sense of the term, but it also explains why, when you're the policeman of the world, you have to gaffle a few Rodney Kings now and then. So I give you this classic field recording of Captain Eli Liflander serenading his pet schnauzer Voorhees with this charming war madrigal. Oh, Americans crave a tranquil life. We just want to live in peace. But the planet gives us war and strife, and it does not seem to cease. So we send our soldiers overseas to protect our global plan, to bring our enemies to their knees. We'll fight to the very last man, with a row-dow, row-diddle-dow, with a row-dow, diddle-i-dan. If Saddam Hussein wants to bitch and complain and to hide his poison gas, we'll bomb his fields and shall not yield till we kick some towel-head ass. After that, look out Afghanistan, 'cause we're coming back for more. For we bombed a slew of civilians there, no one cares if we kill a few more. With a row-dow, row-diddle-dow, with a row-dow-diddle-i-dor. All this fear and fright from the Yemenites is a game we will not play. We will torture and kill each terrorist. Where the hell is Yemen anyway? And if Saudi Arabia doesn't toe the line, we can bomb their palaces too. And we'll pick that Black Hawk up again from the streets of Mogadishu. With a row-dow, row-diddle-dow, with a row-dow-diddle-i-do. To fight fundamentalists in Iran, we must aid and strengthen the Kurds. Disembowel the Sikhs, those heathen freaks, by dropping bombs like turds. Oh, the Hindus and the Pakis too, they will dance to Yankee jigs. For the only way to keep Indians free is to treat them just like nigs. With a row-dow, row-diddle-dow, with a row-dow, diddle-i-digs. We shall go to Northern Ireland to remove hostility. We'll hide strychnine in the Catholics, ale cyanide in the Protestants' tea. If the Ruskies dare to pollute our air with threats of nuclear attack, We will give those worms some smallpox germs and the Chechen rebels anthrax. With a row-dow, row-diddle-dow, with a row-dow, diddle-i-dax. If the Chinese Han won't leave Taiwan, we shall push them under the waves. We will strafe them all by the Beijing Wall, put fortune cookies on their graves. We shall visit North Korea next, and we'll blast those gooks to hell. Maybe this time we can push them back to the 35th parallel. With a row-dow, row-diddle-dow, with a row-dow, diddle-i-dell. We will stand in the sand of Palestine, show the Yids who's really boss. Blow the head off any Arab kid with a stone he's planning to toss. Oh, the Ivory Coast will soon be toast when we force Gbagbo to retrench. Then we'll give all the rebels Pepsi and Coke just to thumb our nose at the French. With a row-dow, row-diddle-dow, with a row-dow, diddle-i-dench. When I see those hateful pacifists, how I hate to hear them whine, for they do not know how urgent it is to protect the bottom line. So if some young soldiers have to die for the good old USA, let them blow our enemies to the sky, for that's the American way. With a row-dow, row-diddle-dow, with a row-dow, diddle-hooray. With a row-dow, row-diddle-dow, with a row-dow, diddle-i-day. So yes, America's been taking some lumps in the world community, diplomats calling us arrogant and bullies just because we wanted to change the Middle East around a little, people across the sea marching and burning the American flag because, well, if there's no soccer game that day, what else do they have to do? But as soon as the Iraqi war was over, 6 whole weeks later, now they want to jump on the old star-spangled bandwagon and order up some of those oil fields. Now they want to be part of the coalition to keep Iraq democratic with freely elected leaders, so long as those leaders aren't Muslim. Now they want to ride George Bush's coattails as he rides towards another election victory, his first. Well, no hard feelings. Oh, secondary countries on the map that we could squish like centipedes if we really wanted to. You can get on the American gravy train. You can be our sand buddies. You can watch our stars and stripes wipe and swipe over deserts and abandoned palaces. And I think you can listen to this program. So again, if you're off to parts unknown, let us know if you're able to tune in and listen to Dave's Gone By on the internet by going to WGBB.com and clicking the button for online radio. If you can, drop me an email at davesgoneby@aol.com, because after all, listeners on Long Island, sure, we have those. Listeners in New York City, you bet, now that we're on the net. But listeners in Tunisia, listeners in Uzbekistan, now that would be something. Families swathed in traditional fabrics, drinking yerba mate and listening to the sound of my voice, while the sole English speaker in the village translates everything I say with 40% accuracy. Something like, Moshla Fogel Sel Cornland Dave. Dave Lefkowitz. Shlamogala Del Radio Shlamogala Shlinga Golda Dave's Gone By. Shlamogala Mavesam of Nadanai looks Jewish. Shlamagadona Leka de Cockety Double Ve Goo Boo Boo. Le Estation Shlamala Ve All Day Chinese. Mosholo Glovitz Meshena Gogonle. He's allergic. Now, the English translation of all that is that this program is hosted by a guy named Dave. That's me, Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, critic, humorist, and songwriter, and this is my show, Dave's Gone By. It's a mix of smart talk, silly talk, deadly serious mayhem, and ridiculous sobriety, plus interviews, music, special features. No two shows are exactly the same, unless you have one leg in Freeport and the other leg in Chicago, and you're listening to two different radios, one with each ear, and your thighs are straddling the timeline. But remember, when you do that, the chafing is horrendous. And I am chafing at the saddle to get this show started, because we have so much cool stuff. Of course, the news gone by, a rundown of current events with a sigh and a sneer. We say hola to Cinco de Mayo, and we get theatrical with our very special guest, critic, teacher, and author, Jonathan Kalb. He wrote for The Village Voice, was the chief critic for the New York Press for about 4 years, and he's currently chairman of the theater department at Hunter College. Limelight Editions has just published a compilation of his essays and reviews called, aptly enough, play-by-play. So we're going to hash out some of the issues he lays out in the book, and also talk more generally about the world of the stage. In fact, we'll even be giving away a copy of Play-by-Play. So get a pen and paper, jot down the phone number. Don't call yet. It'll be about 20 minutes from now, after the next segment, because you'll have to answer a question off the air. But then, be ready to call 516-955-1240. That's area code 516-955-1240. If you are the first caller at that time, you can win a copy of Play-by-Play, Theater Essays and Reviews by Jonathan Kalb. Now, if you're not into theater, you don't care about the giveaway, don't turn the dial, don't be scared off. We also have sports. In fact, we have a late-breaking score. Tampa Bay is leading Oakland 20-3 at the half in Super Bowl 37, taking place at San Diego's Qualcomm Stadium on January 26th. Looked like it was going to be a close game in the first quarter, as both the Raiders and the Bucks were knotted at 3, but a couple of interceptions took the wind out of Oakland early, and they're going to have to work hard in the second half to regroup and make it a game again. So again, it's the Raiders leading the Bucks 20-3 at halftime. We'll keep you posted on events as they happen, and remember, Dave's Gone By is the only place you can hear up-to-the-minute coverage of Super Bowl 38, 3 months after it happened. Just one of the special things we do here on Dave's Gone By. It's our 31st show titled Yes, You May, or in honor of the brand new calendar month, Yes, You May. So set your dial at 1240. Keep your web address at WGBB.com. We continue the bone-crunching action with our special guest, theater critic Jonathan Kalb, coming at you right after these important words from someone who sounds amazingly like me. Are you a member of the Rotary Club, the Hadassah, the Elks? Big deal. Why not join something really cool for a change? The Bystanders Club, the official Dave's Gone By fan club. Bystanders get a weekly special email, a bi-monthly newsletter devoted to the show, an autographed membership card eligible for discounts on show merchandise and local businesses, and a one-hour best-of audio tape with gems from the show and maybe even stuff we couldn't put on the radio. It's still just $10 to join for the newsletter, the email, the best-of audio tape. For the cost of two porno magazines, and not even good ones, you can show your support for Dave's Gone By. Just make a $10 check or money order payable to Total Theater and send it to Total Theater, Box 62, that's 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. You can also join via PayPal, the email address davesgoneby@aol.com, davesgoneby@aol.com. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. It's 8:16 p.m. Time to talk theater. Time to get theatrical with my very special guest, Jonathan Kalb. He is chairman of the theater department at CUNY's Hunter College. He was also a critic for The Village Voice and The New York Press, has written for The New York Times and American Theater Magazine. He is the author of Beckett in Performance and the Theater of Heiner Müller, and he has a brand new book, Play-by-Play, Theater Essays and Reviews, 1993 to 2002, published by Limelight Editions. Jonathan Kalb, I want to welcome you to Dave's Gone By.
Thank you.
Hi, Jonathan. How you doing?
I'm
How
fine.
Was your good weekend?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. Now, I should explain that my first acquaintance with Jonathan was when I was writing for a theater website. I was doing news stories about the theater, and it was at the time when you had stopped writing for the New York Press because they had said that they didn't want theater in the paper anymore. They found it boring. It was just not to their taste because I guess it was kind of a right-wing publication. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about that whole story and how you came out of that experience, which was a bit shocking for you at the time.
Well, I tell the story of New York Press in my book, so people who are really curious about it can read the whole dirty story if they like. I don't have rancor in my heart about being fired from a place that never had a lot of comfort about me being there in the first place. You know, I lasted 4 years at New York Press as a weekly columnist, and that was much more than twice as long as any of their other theater writers. The people who ran New York Press were not friendly to my kind of thinking, my kind of writing, and my kind of criticism, and I think that they were just curious in 1997, when I was first hired there, about how their readership, or what they perceived as their readership, would react to serious criticism. And at that time they had a really serious film critic too, Godfrey Cheshire, who was also fired around the time I was. The paper was expanding, and they would have hired a good dance critic, a good television critic, if they could have found one. But when economic times got harder and the paper started shrinking, the people who ran the paper got together and they all asked each other, do you go to the theater? Do you ever go to the theater? And none of them ever went to the theater. And they used that as a guide to what was interesting to their readership, and they said, well, let's just get rid of the theater column.
And what was weirdly ironic was that a few weeks later, they popped up with another theater column that lasted just a few weeks. And do you remember who that was written by?
Well, Mimi Kramer.
No, she's writing now. I mean, this is later they got Mimi Kramer.
Yeah.
But in between, they actually had Klaus von Bülow, of all people, writing theater reviews from England, which I found rather astonishing. I don't know if you recall that.
No, I don't. I read New York Press regularly. I didn't before I wrote for them.
Mimi Kramer did come in after that, and she's been there on and off, I think, for a little while now.
Yeah, well, you know, Mimi's a perfectly respectable critic. She's also a friend of the former owner, and she wanted that job the whole time. And that's one way to look at it. she just wanted the job. But they don't carry that much theater criticism. People who look at the paper more regularly have told me. I think that they were true to their word, that they just don't.
Oh,
think theater's very important.
Yeah. No, she's not in there every week. But what is kind of interesting is that before the New York Press, you were at the Village Voice.
Yeah.
Which since it is a left-wing publication devoted very seriously to off and off Broadway, or at least when it had more money or room, it certainly was. And yet, even there, you did find it a little difficult to make your voice heard.
Well, I have to be fair to the people at New York Press. I was never censored there. I wrote a lot of things that were very contrary to what they believed about the world, and I was never told not to write. Furthermore, I was given as much space as I wanted at New York Press. My column was 1,200 to 1,600 words, and it could run longer if I wanted. And at the Village Voice, when I first started there in 1987, what was called a full review was 700 to 800 words. By the time I stopped writing at the Voice in 97, a full review, what was called a full review, was 500 words. Mm-hmm. And they were writing these things called cameos, asking us to do cameo reviews called, which were 100 to 150 words. And there's a politics to that, too. It's the politics of abbreviation and brevity. It's the politics of bite size, everything, ad speak, and so on and so forth.
And who is deciding which shows get 100 and which shows get the 500 words and which shows get the Michael Feingold treatment.
Right, but my point is that, whatever you want to say about conservatism, there are different types of conservatism, and one type of conservatism wants people who know what they're talking about to have space to say what they think. That's the good side of the right-wing attitude. As long as it lasted, I think it was a fine place to write in New York Press. I had only myself to blame, never the paper, if I didn't say anything perfectly or if it didn't come out quite the way I wanted.
Yeah,
I never say that about The Voice.
Yeah. Well, I will say from the New York Press that although sometimes I find their film critics unintelligible, they're real critics. I mean, still now. They may not have Cheshire, but they have Armand White and I forget the other fellow's name. And they are given the room to expand rather seriously about film.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you now about the book Play by Play, which opens with a lecture that you gave at Barnard College at NYU about the state of theater criticism today. And, of course, not surprisingly, it's a mostly negative essay. If you could just get into that, why it's in such dire straits?
Well, I think we live in a time when almost everything that presents itself as criticism is not real criticism. It's some sort of opinion mongering. It's crypto advertising masquerading as objective commentary. Just about everything that appears in print is designed to confuse the public about the difference between objective commentary and public relations. And it becomes harder and harder in our time to find a niche, a place for a real critical voice. Criticism requires an independent forum, and what we have more and more are print forums and media outlets that are controlled by the very companies that make the product, the entertainment product. And there was a time in the 1960s, 1950s, when there were a lot of independent magazines and newspapers, and this didn't matter because there were a lot of there were a lot of people familiar with essay-like criticism about the various arts, and the various arts were seen as something you needed to know about if you were going to have aspirations to middle-class culture and so on and so forth. And all of that has changed now. You'll never find what you found in 1965, which was a Hollywood producer wanting to know what an intellectual critic really thought about a movie. They couldn't care less today, because they can control the voices people read and people hear. We live in the era of what film people call the blurb whore, people who are paid to say flattering things. There's very, very few independent places to write, and so criticism itself gets squeezed out. You know, I speak in the book about some what I think are quintessential episodes in the last couple of years, and one of them was Giuliani and the Sensation exhibit at Brooklyn Museum.
Right.
Because Giuliani wanted to close that museum down, not just the show, he wanted to close the museum down, deprive it of funding and so on, because he was offended by a exhibit that happened in the museum.
Was that the Madonna covered in doo-doo, or am I...
Right, yeah. There was elephant dung on right. Madonna. Actually, what I thought was an extremely reverential Madonna, frankly. He never saw the show.
Right.
And yet, I think, even though he never closed the show down and the museum down, that he won the fight. And the reason he won the fight is because he got everybody from the left, from the middle, from the right, to agree with his premise, which is that everyone's opinion of artworks, complex artworks, should be respected as long as he claims to be offended, no matter how ignorant that person is. That's the anti-critical ethos right there. It's that everyone's a critic. Hey, isn't everyone a critic? You know? And right there you have a little capsule of the attitude of our time, which is that people who are informed, people who know a little bit more, are seen as people to marginalize, people not to take seriously.
Comedian Bill Maher calls people who are out of the mainstream
right.
in his new show. He's saying that to be out of the mainstream should be a good thing, but it has become some kind of taint for people these days.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask a bit further about your kind of theater that we like, because we're talking a lot about your writing and where that can be and what the society is allowing writers to do. But if you read the book, then you'll see that the first section is devoted basically to Samuel Beckett. Then there's some Mueller stuff. And then towards the very, very end, is you squeeze like some Broadway shows that you saw. And is that sort of a conscious decision of the way that was laid out?
Well, I think that the way that it's laid out is that the longer essays are toward the front because I think that they're more substantial pieces. And the last third of the book are reviews, you know, weekly columns from New York Press. And I didn't mean to say that any of the work in the latter part of the book was less important than the work in the early part of the book, but I
the work that you are reviewing, not your own writing necessarily, but I sort of get the feeling that you do hold to a higher level. Off Broadway and avant-garde and European kinds of styles of theater than commercial Broadway.
Well, I think anybody who knows anything about the theater understands that it's been over a generation since Broadway was taken seriously as the source of important new theater art. Broadway is the commercial theater. It's Broadway represents what can exist in the theater under thoroughly commercial circumstances, and many, many people are interested in that, just as many, many people are interested in the pulp from broadcast TV, you know. Mm-hmm. There will always be, you know, a commercial theater. There will always be a popular theater that pays for itself exclusively through its vulgar advertising and its tits and ass and so on and so forth. And there's nothing wrong with that. It should exist. It does exist. But let's not confuse that with people who have aspirations to bring the theater to as an art to something new, to contribute something original to it. It's not that nothing good ever happens on Broadway. It does, and I write about a few things. It's that is very, very rarely the place to look for important new theater art.
I do want to move into that a little bit, but because I'm wondering if you might consider yourself someone who's more an advocate of director's theater than perhaps playwright's theater.
Well, if I have any reputation at all, among people who read serious criticism, it's as someone who's been very, very hard on directors. All the reviewers of my previous collection, Free Admissions, said that I was very hard on directors. So even though I do like some, very, very aggressively interpretive directors, there are many. There's fewer of those kind of directors that I really admire than there are the other type.
Name a couple, real quick.
Well, there's a Belgian who's been directing a lot at New York Theatre Workshop, Ivo van Hove, and I think he's really smart and really interesting, and I think he never got a fair shake from the American critics who were just...
They saw A Streetcar in a Bathtub, and
right.
That was what they saw.
Right, and he did more Stately Mansions.
Well, that was weird. I saw that one. That was weird.
Yeah. I think he's very, very intelligent, and that those plays in particular were ripe for, they're being exploded. They're American classics. They were ripe for being exploded by somebody who saw them from a totally different point of view. And I think people have a right to try things even if they fall on their face. You know, I always thought Samuel Beckett, whom I revere, was wrong for trying to stop people from trying new things with his texts.
Can I ask really quick, and as the last question, as usual, I left like 15 minutes for this interview, and I should have left a half hour, but because it's just flown by. But why Beckett? Why is Beckett so important to you?
Oh, my goodness, where to start?
in a minute or less.
Beckett is the indispensable playwright of this era. He straddles the modern and the postmodern. He straddles the print culture and media culture. People don't know that Beckett wrote plays for television and radio and a film. He's the playwright who has left us with the most severe challenges to what we assume to be important in theater art, and has made us think again about presence, live presence, in a time when we are thinking almost exclusively about virtuality and virtual presence. It's the indispensable oof in the modern canon.
Well. Thank you, Jonathan Kalb, for your virtual and live presence on Dave's Gone By. I want to remind people about your book, Play-by-Play Theater Essays and Reviews, available from Limelight Editions, which you can buy online from www.limelighteditions.com. Jonathan, I'm going to say goodbye to you, and I'm going to tell people how they can even win a copy of this book. So thanks for calling in.
Okay, thank you, Dave.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, this is how two lucky listeners can get a free copy, courtesy of this program and Limelight Editions. Here's how it works. Once I go to commercial in about a minute, the first person to call the station, and you will be off the air, you can ask for Engineer Paul, and tell Paul what your favorite play or musical of all time is. It could be Phantom, it could be Death of a Salesman, Waiting for Godot, I don't care. But that's the question. What is your favorite theatrical show of all time? Tell Engineer Paul. He'll ask for your name, address, email address, and phone number. And he might take your number and call you back after the show if he doesn't have time. Or he'll get all the information and we'll mail that first caller a copy of Play by Play. Now, our phone number is 516-955-1240. 516-955-1240. Once we get the first winner, we still have one more copy to give away, so keep calling. The second book will go into a random drawing of people who call by the end of the show or email me. So if you're in a car or somewhere you don't have a phone, no biggie. Send me an email, your name, address, and phone number, and your favorite play or musical. Email davesgoneby@aol.com, easy to remember. And you send it by 12:01 a.m. Wednesday morning, May 7th, 51 hours from now. davesgoneby@aol.com. Now we'll pick one random winner from both the calls and the emails. So call 516-955-1240 by the end of the show, or email me at davesgoneby@aol.com over the next 2 days. and you can also win a copy of Play by Play. Then the prize recipient must be 21 years of age or older, must not be a close relative of me or anyone working at WGBB, and you cannot have won a prize from this radio station in the past 90 days. So everyone else, email or call 516-955-1240. The contest begins now. We'll be back with the news gone by in just 1 minute. Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret. These are magical words conjuring up a universe of great entertainment. If you want to know everything about what's happening on the stages of New York, you need to get Performing Arts Insider magazine. For 60 years, Performing Arts Insider has been a bible of the industry. It tells you when shows are opening and closing, what they're about, who's in it, designers, writers, composers, contacts for producers and managers, box office info, parental guides, everything you need to know if you care about theater, opera, and dance, too. As the chief editor of Backstage put it, Performing Arts Insider is who, what, where, and when, all the facts at your fingertips. For more information, how to subscribe or get a sample issue, call 516-295-1511 or go to www.totaltheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. It's 8:35 p.m. and time for the news gone by, a look at events of the past week from a peacekeeping perspective. In post-war, pre-peace news, American soldiers are trying to restore order and a semblance of everyday life in Iraq now that Saddam Hussein has been kicked out of power and his base of operations blown to bits. The idea is for the next regime there to follow America's lead in creating a democracy where freedom of speech and the right to dissent is both permitted and encouraged. In related news, an anti-U.S. protest by Iraqis got out of hand, so American soldiers shot 14 civilians and wounded 75 others. Said one American soldier off the record, quote, "They really don't like us." Said one Iraqi civilian off the record, "They think this was bad. Wait till we bring bazookas to the Columbus Day Parade." Also in the Middle East, the Palestinians have a new prime minister, Mahmoud Abbas, superseding longtime chairman Yasser Arafat. You can tell a new era has begun in Arab-Israeli relations, because just as the vote was taking place, a terrorist blew himself up at a Tel Aviv restaurant, killing three people and wounding dozens more. And to show just how much the new regime will differ from the old one, Abbas came out strongly against the violence and said, "Naughty, naughty." As punishment for the terrorist act, less than 24 hours after the carnage, President Bush announced a roadmap for Middle East peace and definitive plans for a Palestinian state. Good thing the terrorist didn't kill 100 people, or we'd be giving the Arabs Florida right now. As fears of the SARS virus grow across the globe, Canadian Prime Minister Jean Chrétien, who, I probably pronounced that wrong, who normally stays in Ottawa, vowed to sleep over in hard-hit Toronto. It was his way of showing the city to be safe, even though more than a dozen people have died from SARS there, the only non-Asian country with fatalities from the illness. Asked why he chose to visit Toronto at this time, Chrétien said, "Seems perfectly safe. The World Health Organization is completely overreacting. anybody get a lozenge?" Also on the disease front, President Bush, of all people, has taken a strong and proactive stance on the world AIDS crisis. He has asked Congress for $15 billion to spend over the next 5 years to fight the spread of this global pandemic. Far more surprising, White House spokesperson Ari Fleischer says that not only is Bush committed to funding scientific AIDS research, but he also supports AIDS education. That includes a program used in Uganda successfully to reduce dramatically the spread of the virus. It's something conservative Christians can't be too happy about, since it follows what Fleischer calls the ABC approach. This is a quote from Fleischer. "The ABC approach is abstain. If you can't abstain, be faithful. And if you can't be faithful, use condoms." Whoa, go George! I guess you learned something from Bill Clinton's mistakes after all. I mean, think of the hassles he would have saved himself if he'd used a condom. But let's not go bringing over the left-wing liberal tunic for old Georgie boy just yet. Part of the language of the $15 billion AIDS package says that the money must not be used to promote or perform abortions. So the good news is that organizations who do the procedure may still apply for grants for their other services, whether they'll get them. But still, hey, considering what we've had in power the last 2 years, and remembering the original Bush and Reagan terms before that, this is a step forward. One conservative Republican said he hoped the bill would be amended to de-emphasize condoms and stress religion instead. He said, rather than the ABC method, people should emulate the Catholics and their DREAM approach, D-R-E-A-M, denial, repression, extreme agony, and molestation. Hey, it worked for the bishops at Rockville Center, it can work for you. Now, no one said self-control is easy. In celebrity news, Ozzy Osbourne's 17-year-old son Jack checked into a drug and alcohol treatment center last week. He admitted that marijuana and booze had become out of control in his new post-television lifestyle. Father Ozzy is, of course, a chronic alcoholic who fell off the wagon last year during his wife's cancer scare. He was proud of his son for realizing he had a problem and dealing with it. The irony is that despite their wildness and endless profanity, the Osbournes were seen as a kind of model American family, flawed but loving and sharing and essentially sensible. That kind of unity is precious, and it will come in handy in a couple more years when all four Osbournes will have to share the same liver. In science news, researchers at the University of Edinburgh have made a rather sad discovery. Fish feel pain. Experiments in which the lips of rainbow trout were injected with bee venom and acetic acid showed that the fish changed their behaviors in a non-reflex way. According to the head scientist, fish went into a rocking motion, similar to the kind mammals use when they feel discomfort or stress. The National Angling Alliance of Sport Fishermen contested the findings. They pointed to another study that shows fish just don't have sufficiently developed neocortexes to feel pain the way we do. On the other side, PETA got into the act, of course, saying they were sorry fish had to suffer, but we told you so. PETA also did its own study on humans, where they put fish hooks through people's eyes. And when the subjects flopped around and tried to escape, they were hit with mallets and thrown into giant coolers filled with ice cubes. Asked if that was rather cruel, a PETA spokesperson said, no animals were harmed in the experiments, so what's the problem? Also on the science front, British scientists have advanced a theory that Albert Einstein and Sir Isaac Newton, two of the world's most influential geniuses, may have been autistic. An article in New Scientist magazine states that the men who discovered gravity and the theory of relativity possibly suffered from a syndrome which causes deficiencies in communication skills but doesn't affect other brain functioning. Personally, I don't know whether or not they were autistic, but we do have one thing to go on. I managed to secure an authentic audio tape, very rare, of Albert Einstein explaining his theory of relativity. Now, it's kind of technical, so I'm only going to play a little bit, but you can judge for yourself whether he's a genius or a savant or whatever. So here is Albert Einstein, circa 1920, explaining the theory of relativity. All Gaussian coordinate systems are essentially equivalent for the formulation of the general laws of nature. Yay, nature, yay, I like nature. By making use of the Lorentz transformation, we can replace the space-time variables. Space, I want to go to space, yay. Gaussian coordinates, yay. I make poop, yay. Poop floats in space, floating poop, yay. The inertial mass of a body is not constant, yay. Speaking of mental illness, Long Island developers have announced a plan to build a mini-city in Brentwood that's 1 million square feet of business, entertainment, and housing, all surrounding Brentwood's only landmark, Pilgrim State Psychiatric Hospital. The district will include 9,000 apartments, hotels, upscale shopping, and office buildings. Out of 172 acres of forested land, only 37 will remain. But residents are less worried about environmental damage than the emotional toll the project could take on patients at the hospital. Developers say they studied the inmates there and have designed commercial outlets specifically for their needs. For instance, the apartment buildings will not only have loft space, they'll have Zoloft space with padded patios. The Gap there sells all-weather jackets made with blended polar fleece and bipolar fleece. And the local HMV won't stand for hot music and videos. It'll stand for Haldol, Melril, and Valium. Thank you very much. Surely psychiatric counseling is in the future for two pilots on Southwest Airlines. They were fired for flying a plane in their skivvies. A company spokesperson said the pilots were all but naked while handling the aircraft. So the duo admit to peeling. They're appealing. They say the reason they did it was because they spilled coffee all over their uniforms. Yeah, the passengers were never in danger. During the incident, the only technical difficulty with the plane came when one pilot had to loosen an O-ring. But that's just because it was cutting off his circulation. In local news, rapper Freaky Zeke might consider changing his name to Fender Bender, as he's recovering from injuries stemming from a car accident last week. He was a passenger in a white Jeep Cherokee that got sideswiped by a sedan late at night in Chelsea. According to the Daily News, after the minor accident, the occupants of both vehicles got out of their cars and decided to settle things. Now, since all the people involved were either from Harlem or Hempstead, they didn't exchange driver's licenses. They exchanged gunfire. Although investigators don't think the incident was part of a rap feud, the kind that killed Run DMC's Jam Master Jay, according to a witness, so many bullets flew, one gunman actually had time to stop and reload. Now, the driver of the Jeep was killed in the melee. Freaky Zeke is in stable condition. He did object, however, to the traffic ticket he got for the incident. Apparently, police found him unable to bleed in a straight line. Also, they clocked his bullets at 300 miles per hour, while Zeke says there's no way they could have been going more than 250. Also on the music front, Lady Miss Keir, former lead singer for the pop band Delight, isn't feeling much groove in her heart for Sega. She's suing the video game giant for appropriating her style and image for the game Space Channel 5. Keir says she was offered £10,000 to use her iconic image of ponytailed hair, short skirt, knee-high boots, and signature cry of ooh la la, and when she refused, they went ahead and created a character that was virtually the same. Keir is asking for $750,000 in damages, not so much for stealing her image, but for the subtitle of the video game, which is called Whatever Happened to That One-Hit Wonder, Pseudo-Psychedelic Slut Muffin, God, She Must Look Like a Skank Now. And finally, last Saturday, actor Charlton Heston made his final appearance as president of the National Rifle Association. Though too feeble and beleaguered by Alzheimer's to do much more than show up, Heston did raise a gun over his head and say his trademark line, "From my cold, dead hands." He also said, "Mommy, why are all these camels at my birthday party?" And nevertheless, Heston received a lengthy standing ovation and told the crowd, "This is a moment I will never forget," which he then forgot. And that's the news gone by for May 4th, 2003. Please send your comments, opinions, and freaky zekies to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. Now, that is also the email to win the copy of Play by Play, davesgoneby@aol.com. We reserve the right to read your letters and emails on the air, name withheld upon request, adding semicolons and exclamation points for emphasis, and little giggles for ironic overlay. That's Dave's Gone By, no apostrophe, at AOL.com, or snail mail, Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. Please, no pseudo-psychedelic slut muffins. I'm allergic. Hi, folks. Dave Lefkowitz here from Dave's Gone By, and I want to tell you about a product, event, or service. I'm going to talk about it for half a minute or a minute. I'm going to make it really interesting, and all my listeners are going to go, "Hey, maybe I'll try this product, event, or service." It's called advertising or sponsorship, and it's easy, cost-effective, and just plain effective. To get your person, place, or thing, well, not thing, promoted on Dave's Gone By and reach listeners all over Brooklyn, Queens, Long Island, and the tri-state area, just give us a call at 516-295-1511 or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. Check our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, and see sponsorship opportunities, ad rates, and more. Again, the number, 516-295-1511. Insert your product, event, or service here. In an ideal world, Dave's Gone By would play all weekend long, but I need my beauty sleep. Should you turn WGBB off when I'm not on? No way. There's a bunch of other shows you should listen to, like Long Island's Dating, an advice program for singles hosted by Bonnie D. Graham, kicking off the weekend Friday nights at 6. Or Joe Salzone Live, politics and current events from a conservative but open-minded perspective, Saturday nights at 7:30. And Entertainment Long Island, an hour of laid-back humor and interviews hosted by Don Lewis, with live music from Eddie Hogg and the boys. Don's show is on right before mine, Sunday nights at 7. So you see, if it can't be all Dave all the time, it can still be radio worth listening to. Long Island's Dating, Fridays at 6. Joe Salzone Live, Saturdays at 7:30. Entertainment Long Island, Sundays at 7. And during the week, all sorts of Chinese people. Radio the way it ought to be. Listeneros, as Liz Fair reminds us, mañana es Cinco de Mayo, the 5th day of May. It is not Mexican Independence Day. It is a holiday commemorating the morning in 1862 when Mexico said enough to European colonization. After Spain and England left Mexico, Napoleon kept the French army there, complete with the most modern weapons and equipment available at that time. And what did Mexico have? Precious little. They'd just been through the Mexican-American War, and also a civil war. But at the Battle of Puebla, the French made a tactical mistake. No wonder they're anti-war, they've never been any good at it. At this battle, they were routed by the Mexican army under General Zaragoza and cavalry leader Porfirio Diaz. It was a huge victory, not just for Mexico, but for the northern part of the United States, since Napoleon had been helping the Confederacy during the Civil War. Speculation is that Bonaparte wanted Mexico not so much to expand the French Empire as to keep the U.S. from growing too powerful. Ironically, after the Battle of Puebla, Napoleon got smarter and sent 30,000 soldiers to Mexico City. So France stayed in Mexico until 1867, and it was the United States, through military and political help, that finally pushed them out. It's understandable, then, why Cinco de Mayo is a big deal in the town of Puebla, but not in the rest of Mexico. It's more of a party day for Chicanos here, an excuse to eat Mexican food, have a colorful parade, and drink Coronas until your brain cells devaluate faster than a peso. San Diego seems to have the biggest celebration. One website says, quote, you can listen to the mariachis, watch the señoritas whirl, and inhale the delectable aroma of sizzling tacos al carbón at San Diego Historic Park. There's a Mexican hat dance contest, performances by the children of the Hispanic Mexican Ballet, Aztec dancers, marimba concerts, and the salsa of Benny Holman's Caliente Brass. Oh, yeah, that sounds authentic. Buenos días, señores y señoras. Bienvenido al parque. Yo soy Benny Holman. I'm sorry, it just doesn't go. It's like hearing, hola, welcome to Cinco de Mayo. I am your mariachi band leader, Irving Schusselman. Anyway, the San Diego celebration also features a ride in a vintage Wells Fargo stagecoach and a reenactment of the Battle of Puebla, complete with, well, I don't know, death, I guess. Lots of dead French people, which will likely be pretty popular during the current national mindset. I wonder if the day George Bush declares the Iraqi War officially over will become a holiday too. Or maybe people will celebrate the first day of the war, when we lobbed over one or two missiles to target Saddam Hussein and his closest advisors. Call it Shock and Awe Day. Everybody celebrates by eating a falafel and getting a 3% discount at the local gas station. And after everybody gets gas, they have a party. A bath party, after which they all run to the toilet and take a shiite. Yes, that's the comedy bell, signaling the Dave's Gone By Bad Pun of the Week, brought to you as a public certainty by the Dave's Gone By radio show. Every week we make a pun so awful, so obvious, so word-weary, we should be ashamed of ourselves. But we're not! If we were, could I do this? No way, Jose. I ring that bell as a source of pride and also as a totally blatant pitch for advertising, because you can sponsor the Bad Pun of the Week. Yes, you, usted, tú, or dare I say, vosotros. You can bring publicity to your product, your service, your company, and you can have brand identity by linking it to an infantile piece of comedy signaled by the ringing of the comedy bell. It's easy, it's cheap, dirt cheap, tierra cheap. So call 516-295-1511 and ask about sponsoring the Dave's Gone By Bad Pun of the Week. 516-295-1511 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com. And remember, we're on the radio and streaming on the internet, so you can reach listeners all over Long Island and New York City and across Los Estados Unidos. Comprende? So what it means is, by 11 de Mayo, you could be hearing your company name, your fabuloso product, on this very program. That's 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com to sponsor the Dave's Gone By Bad Pun of the Week. Well, mis amigos, how tiempo flies. Before we vamoose, we do have time for a Super Bowl update. Beginning of the third quarter, a drive from middle of the field, capped by a short touchdown pass, has put Tampa Bay up 27-3 over the Raiders. It ain't looking good for Oakland, but we'll have more updates for you next week, because anyone can bring you today's baseball scores, but only here do you get to relive the glories of Super Bowl 37 for absolutely no reason whatsoever. Just part of what makes doing this show so satisfying week after 31 weeks. My thanks this week going out to station manager Joey, engineer Paul, my wife Joyce, who nursed me back to health from sore throatville, what a sweetie, and big special thanks to my guest Jonathan Kalb. By his book, Play by Play, published by Limelight Editions. We gave away a copy to a lucky caller earlier. Not taking any more phone calls tonight, but you can still email me to win a copy. We have to receive your email no later than 12:01 a.m. Wednesday morning, May 7th, so you have 2 days to email Dave's Gone By with your name, address, phone number, and favorite play or musical. At random, one winner will get a copy of Jonathan Kalb's Play-by-Play, published by Limelight Editions. If you don't win, go to limelighteditions.com and order the book right online. It's a handsome trade paperback and a good gift for someone artsy in your life. As long as you're in the mood for spending money, why not show how much you love this program by becoming a member of the Bystanders Club? Just $10 via check, money order, on or online via PayPal. You can go to our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, for the information. If you forget the URL, just Google search Dave's Gone By and we're right up top. So I want to just tell everybody to check out what else is on WGBB this week during the other 167 hours when I'm not on. There's On the Edge with Iz Crespo, 6:30 Sundays, political talk on Joe Salzone Live, Saturdays at 7:30, Entertainment Long Island with Don Lewis, 7 o'clock on Sundays, right before this program, and Friday nights at 6, it's Long Island's Dating with Bonnie D. Graham. Oh, and stay tuned from 10 to midnight for rap and hip-hop on Real Time Radio. So many plugs, so little time, this might as well be Hair Club for Men. But alas, it's time for me to wig out of here. Oh, God. Not even worth a bad pun. I'll be back next Sunday night, May 11th, Mother's Day, 8 p.m., on WGBB AM 1240 and live streaming on the net at WGBB.com. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Keep the Cinco, hold the Mayo, and gone by.